Baruchim Abayim, ladies. We are studying Perashat Naso. It is well known that Perashat Naso is the biggest Perashah in the entire Torah. It has the most Pesukim. 176 Pesukim to be exact. Maybe one time I'll be able to explain it to you why it has 176 Pesukim. There's good reasons, I believe, why they chose that number, 176. What's so special about it? But not for today. I will tell you, but, that it's not a coincidence that this parasha always comes after Shavuot. It's a good sign. We just received the Torah on Shavuot, and it's as if we're telling God, give us the biggest portion you can give us. Once we receive the Torah, we want a lot of the Torah. So we have 176 Pesukim to show that we're thrilled. We don't want a small parasha. Give us as much Pesukim and words as you can. That's an indication that our acceptance was b'simha, we were happy, we're privileged. But I want to learn one of the parashiyot, the smaller paragraphs in this week's parasha. It's famous, just to make some insights on it. Our parasha talks about the case of Sota. This is a very scandalous subject. But we must talk about it because the Torah gives importance to it. And there's even a whole Gemara, this thick. And the Gemara is called Masechet Sota. And it talks about this case. What is it? It's talking about a situation of a man that's married. Jewish people are married. A couple. They got married according to the laws of Moses and Israel. Kedat, Moshe, v'Yisrael. A bona fide Jewish marriage. And for some reason, the husband has a suspicion on his wife. I don't have to be so explicit. You understand what I mean when I say suspicion. And there's reasons why he has these suspicions. It's not coming from nowhere. There's reasons why he thinks this. Well, the Gemara explains why he suspects it. This is very serious. He sees his wife acting in a talkative manner. Nothing wrong with talking. They might have gone to a wedding in the synagogue. Everybody's in the synagogue, but he's mingling. And they might have went to the bar over there. You have to have a bar. And she wants to get a drink. You're allowed to drink. Maybe she was getting a seltzer water. Okay. And there was a man there. Also, maybe married man or not. Doesn't matter. Hi, madame, how are you? Derech Eretz, shalom, nice, how are you, nice to see you. How's the kids, how's this, how's that? Small talk, chatter. But over the bar, nothing. It's innocent. It's never innocent, but it's innocent to a point. The husband is over there. In the corner of his eye, he sees words being exchanged. He doesn't even think. This happens. This is social chatter. We don't think of anything of it. Why should we think anything? But the next night is also a wedding. This time of year, every night there's a wedding. And everybody's invited to every wedding. So, deja vu. She's thirsty again. She didn't drink since last night. So she goes to the bar again. The bartender said, I know, you want a seltzer. Like last, how do you know? I know, I remember. Min ha-shamayim, that same guy also is there. Oh, we meet again. Shalom aleichem. Now already, I can't ask you how your children are. Now. We did that already. Nothing changed in 24 hours. More diburim, things. The husband looks from the corner of his eye. No, again. What's going on over here? His mind is working in a funny way. He has suspicions now. I don't know, suspicions. Or he says, this is not right. So he comes home. This is the Torah's case. I'm just giving you the example to make it dramatic so you know what's going on. And so that you should also know that it's not so far-fetched. You shouldn't think, oh, that's, 2,000 years ago, this is impossible to happen today. I'm trying to show you. There's no new sins. It's all the same sins. Anyway, the husband now is concerned. So they come home in the car. The husband tells the wife, what's going on over here? What are you, crazy? You became paranoid now? Just because I don't know what I became, I don't know what I didn't become, but I saw it tonight, last night. Chas v'shalom! Shame on you, you should even be thinking, okay, mechila, I don't know. The third night, there's a pigeon at Ben. They go to the pigeon at Ben. Now it's not at the bar, but they see, again he says, nice is enough, I have to make a warning, official warning. They come home, there's two people in the house, two men. The wife says, who are these people? These are witnesses. I brought them here. Witnesses for what? Am I in trial over here? No, you're not on trial yet. Soon you'll be on trial. But now you're not yet on trial. But I'm giving you an official warning in front of these two men that they should hear me warning you. I do not want you to be secluded with this man. Peloni Almoni, Mr. Flan Flan, you're not allowed to be with this man. What? I can't believe what you're doing to me. Yes, that's what I'm doing to you. Okay? You were warned. Two witnesses, you heard? Oh, we heard. They mark it down. They go home. Wait. A few weeks later, two witnesses come to the husband and we say, we feel we have an obligation to tell you what we know. What do you know? We don't know anything, but we just know that your wife was secluded with this man. We don't know what happened. How did you know? We were in this place, wherever it was, and we were just standing by the door. And we tried to go into the door was locked. Right? Door was locked, okay. We didn't think of anything. And all of a sudden, the man and the wife walked out. Oh, they were behind the door. That's all we know. What were they doing? Maybe they were playing checkers. Maybe they were learning. Havruta. Maybe they had a class. Anything could happen behind closed doors. We don't know. Maybe she's Hatzalah. And he was having a heart attack. We have to give the benefit of the doubt. We don't know. We don't have vision that we could see through a door. But we just know that something here is very not good. Because she was warned, and there's already a pattern, 2-3 times already, of talk, over some wine maybe. And now, we see this, and the husband says, this is it. We cannot remain together until we get to the bottom of this subject. So we need to make an investigation. It's an unbelievable investigation. I'll give you the details of the investigation in a second. But I want to tell you who leads the investigation here. Normally, when somebody's under suspicion, we go to a court of Hakamim. This one says his claims, this one says her claims, and so on. You owe me money, whatever it is. And usually the rabbis hear the evidence, and they weigh it, and they make a decision. But in this case, the Torah says, we cannot make this decision by human beings. God has to make this decision. God has to give us a ruling. How do we get God to give us a ruling? Where's the court of God? So you know that she goes to the temple, and she drinks special waters, which I'll talk to you in a minute about these waters, but I want to make a point. And she drinks these waters. These waters have the name of God in them. These are special waters. And she drinks it. If she's innocent, then nothing will happen to her. The waters will just go into her system and be like a sort of healing to her. But if she's guilty, the waters will cause her to explode. I know it sounds a little messy, but that's what Torah says. And the Torah gives us the details, how she explodes as a result of her adulterous behavior. Why does it need to go that far? Why couldn't you go to a court? Why do you have to drink the waters? One rabbi once said, because once there's a suspicion, and the husband suspects his wife, nobody is going to take that suspicion out of his brain ever until he hears it from God himself. They'll go to a court, the rabbis, what do they know? She paid them, they're on her side, it's a cover-up. It'll never leave the brain. He'll never have closure. But if God is saying, oh, God said, innocent, innocent, finish. He can go home, he's happy. Guilty, guilty. Well, she goes to the Beit HaMikdash. At that point, they cannot be together anymore, as man and wife. Once already there's a suspicion like this, finished. Now the next stage is Jerusalem. When they get to the Beit HaMikdash, I can start reading you the Pesukim now. Daber el b'nei Yisrael v'amarta alehem ish ish ki teste ishto. Any man whose wife shall go astray. Teste is to go astray. She turned. She went the wrong way. But if you could read the word also tishte, she became a shota. She became crazy. Gemara says, a person doesn't make a sin unless he becomes insane. Especially a sin like this of adultery. For a little pleasure, you're going to break up your family, you're going to break up your children, you're going to ruin your whole reputation. For a little pleasure of this world, must be she went crazy. So the Torah says, tishteh, tishteh, she became out of her mind. So, the Torah says, you bring her to the temple. And she has to bring us. We don't want her to blow up. We want her to admit her sin. Which means, the Kohen tells her, listen, you don't want this to happen to you. Just tell us that you did it. And then, we'll call it a day. Your husband will give you a divorce. We'll go home. Everybody will be good. You'll still live. But if you don't admit and you're guilty, and you're going to drink these waters, it's not going to be good for you. It's going to be very, very harmful. So admit. We try to coax her to admit. We don't want this to happen. But she's a stubborn lady. She said, no, I didn't do it. I didn't do it. I promise you, what happened? I don't know, I went to get my pocketbook in the room over there. This man was praying Minha, and the door closed behind us. He was praying Minha, I was getting my pocketbook. Nothing happened. Ah, you're so confident? Then drink the waters then. If you're saying nothing, if it was as innocuous as that, drink. But if it's not, if there was avon done over here, it doesn't take too long to make avon. Be careful. She says, I'm going to drink. So it says, first she has to bring a korban, a meal offering. What does she bring? Kemach se'orim. She brings barley flour. Do you know, whenever we bring a flour offering in the Beit HaMikdash, it's from wheat. This is the only, or one of the only offerings that are brought from barley. Why? That she says, I quote, Se'orim velo chitim, hi asta ma'ase behema, vekorbana ma'achal behema. Barley is animal food. Animals don't eat wheat, they eat barley. She acted like an animal, therefore let her sacrifice be animal food. Now, I have to stop here for 1 second, because I know what all of you are thinking of. Oh, what about the man? What about the man? I'm not going to answer you that today. What about the man? Now we're talking about the lady. In another class, because you think it's unfair, and there's prejudice, well, the Torah, well, the man, also, everybody will get their share. You don't have to be God's policeman. Don't worry, God has a lot of eyes. He can see everybody's avon. So today we're talking about the sotah. It's not to the exclusion that the man is free, and it's a man's world, and he can do whatever he wants, and it's a lady. Don't think like that. That's corrupt thinking, because of lack of understanding of what's going on over here. So you think that, oh, the Torah is picking on the lady. Nobody escapes the avonot. Not a man, not a woman, not an old one, not a young. Everybody is equal in the eyes of God. So you have to get over that. You know, don't let that be a stumbling block in your brain. And we'll go further. Oh, see, I know you see that. Did I tell you that? I know it. I know. That's why I stopped. I saw it's bothering you. I know it's bothering you. Huckabee doesn't blow up. Huckabee doesn't blow up. You want the whole world to blow up now? One at a time. Well, maybe she's not going to blow up. We don't know the end of the story. Okay? But I have to go now, so we can't continue. It happened a lot. Anyway, so, what do you mean she acted like an animal? Maybe she didn't do anything. So why does she have to bring? Because the sotah is guilty even if she was playing checkers. Because what are you doing over here? What are you doing secluded? You're a married lady. What are you doing talking to other men? More than the normal way? What are you doing if your husband warned you? And how is it that you're in the room alone? But I did nothing. You're guilty alone. That's ma'aseh behema. When a person breaks the ethical mode of modesty and goes beyond the borders of normal behavior and crosses the line of what's considered mutar and starts to get into the area of things that are not nice. So that's an animal does that. But I did nothing. No, you did. Which means you shouldn't think, even if the sotah over here in our story doesn't blow up, you shouldn't say, oh, hasidah kadishah, tzaddikit. No, she's not tzaddikit. She still has a crime on her shoulders. It's just that she didn't commit the avon of adultery to the final degree. But she has a lot of teshuvah to be made. It doesn't warrant her to explode. Okay. But she's not the one of the 36 hidden tzaddikim. Now it says, Lo yitzok aleha shemen. On this meal offering, this flour offering, do not put oil on it. Normally, we put oil on the offerings. The oil makes it shiny and nice. The oil is shiny. Why don't we put oil on this sacrifice?
She says, "Shelo yehe korbanam mehudar," that her sacrifice should not be elegant. Shashemen karui or, shemen is light. Oil brings light. Vehi asta b'choshech, she committed her sins in darkness. Therefore, there's no light for this lady, no oil. Velo yiten aleha lebona. In the olden days, when they used to bring a meal offering, they would bring flour, oil, and they would put a certain spice called frankincense. It's a very aromatic. There's a smell, delicious. Do not put lebona. You know why, Rashi says? Sha'imahot nikraot lebona. In Shir HaShirim, Shlomo refers to the matriarchs, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah. He says they're like lebona. They're so good in their deeds, they have such a good fragrance, so that she says, Vihi pirsha midarchehen. She separated from the ways of the mothers. She did not act in the modest way like Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. She is immodest in her way. Therefore, no lebona. As if you have removed yourself from the tradition of the matriarchs that are called lebona. And then it says, wait. Well, you bring her to the Kohen, and it says you take the special waters and you put it in keli heres. What is keli heres? An earthenware vessel. You ever see earthenware vessel? Not the ones that have a mug, which is nice, which is finished and polished. Earthenware it's a very cheap vessel. Not crystal or something like that. It's unfinished. It's a very base vessel, heres. And you put the water in there. Why do you use such a cheap vessel? That she says, "Bichli heres, he ishketa et hanoef yayin meshubach bekosot meshubachim, lefichach teshteh mayim amarim v'mekidah bezuya shel heres." How did she commit this crime, the lady? Part of it was over a drink. The drink allows a person to lose his God. So she probably served the adulterer fancy wine in a goblet. So the Torah says, you served him wine in a fancy goblet, you will drink bitter waters in an ugly vessel. Whatever she did, we're doing the opposite. And where do we get this water from? The water comes from the sink. Where are you going to get the water from? I'll explain to you what it means. There was a special sink in the Beit HaMikdash called the Kiyor. The Kiyor was made of copper. It was a copper sink. Where did they get the copper from? When the Jewish women were in Egypt, they had copper mirrors. Like a lady has today a mirror in a pocketbook and they look at themselves. So the Jewish woman had copper mirrors. God said, these mirrors are holy. And God said when he was building the Mikdash, that the ladies donated these mirrors and they melted down the copper, and from the copper mirrors they made the sink. What's so special? The sink is a holy vessel. The Kohanim would wash their hands every day from this sink. This was considered a holy vessel of the Mikdash. It's made from mirrors. Mirrors is something that's vain. Torah says, no, these ladies use these mirrors for a good purpose. To make themselves beautiful for their husbands. Such a mirror is a holy thing, that a lady should look beautiful, because the men in Egypt did not want to have children anymore. They said, what are we to bring children into this world for? Look at this world, it's abadim, and it's troubles, and sarot. And the woman said, no, now it's bad. But in the future, it'll get better. And if you don't have children, nobody's going to leave Egypt. You need Jews to leave Egypt. So we cannot think of the way the world is today. We have to have faith in God. And the men said, no, it's been like this for so many years already. We've given up. And the ladies took out their mirrors. And they made themselves beautiful and attractive. They went to their husbands. They had more children. So God says these mirrors were used to make peace between man and wife. These are good things. So God says, the sota, you used your mirror to beautify yourself for another man. You used the vanity of a mirror to make yourself pretty for somebody else. She drinks from the kiyor. Because again, the kiyor is like a rebuke to her. You went against the tradition of the Jewish woman. But I'm wondering, what type of lady are we talking about over here? Must be talking about a secular lady who does avonot at the end of the day. Some hilonit, not religious, not from Torah back, who would do such a thing? It has to come from somebody that went to public school education, never was brought up in religious environment, never had any connection to Yahadu. Who does this without? So do we have an indication from the Pasuk who we're talking about? So the next Pasuk says, so when she comes in front of the Kohen, Upara et rosh ha'isha, he uncovers her hair to shame her. Oh, uncovers her hair? Who are we talking about over here? A lady came into the Beit HaMikdash. She has a tichel. You know what a tichel in Arabic? You know what tichel means? Tichel in Yiddish is a kerchief, a hat, or a wig, or whatever it is, covered the hair. She's a religious lady. Who has a pararot? Now, this doesn't mean it can only happen to a religious lady, but the Torah is saying even, there's no, when it comes to avonot, you shouldn't think, oh, I'm religious, this doesn't apply to me, oh, I'm from the good guys. That's them. It doesn't matter. Avonot can affect anybody. It can affect somebody with a hat, without a hat, with a beard, without a beard, with a wig, without a wig. It's the avonot are non-discriminatory. They are not prejudiced. They go after everybody. We have to be extra careful because as religious people, we think, oh, we're immune. No, this is not for us. Them over there, somewhere else. No. Shwehei. You can't wait till she blows up. We'll see. So you have to know that nobody is immune from this avon. We have a long way to go in our behavior. As religious people, we have to be careful. The avon that we're talking about in this story doesn't start at the end. It starts very innocently. That's how all big sins start. The Yetzer Hara is very smart. He's not going to tell a person, go do the avodah, so he breaks you down. He chips away, a little talk here, a little drink here, a little thing here, blah, blah, all of a sudden. So, it all started because the lady, the man, what is a married lady talking to another man for? For what purpose? Besides a hello and a goodbye, and words of just courtesy, for what purpose is there a conversation here? This is where it begins. I'm not talking about social kissing and all this other practices. Social kissing, the Torah never even dreamt about that. This was just talking about they're talking to each other. But to come along now and everybody's kissing everybody. Forget about the germs. Why is everybody kissing me? But anyway, what are we kissing each other for? But this is, and I'm not talking about everybody dancing with each other. This the Torah never dreamt. Such things like this, such promiscuity, is very bad. This is what it leads to. Everybody thinks, well, Averot have a limit. You know, I'll go to this point, and then I'll stop. That's it, finished. It's like, you know, when you have a potato chip. You know what I'm talking about? You say, no, I'm just going to have one. I promise you, I swear to God, I make a neder, I'm homage, I'm only going to have one. And then you say, what's the difference? I'm going to have two, so what? What's the difference? Then you say, no, what? All of a sudden, the bag is empty, so what happened? Who ate all the potato chips? That's the way Avonot are. You say, oh, that's going to go up to here. And then, you go there, and all of a sudden, boom, you fell in the well. And that's what happened to this lady over here. Well, they're just talking. They're still talking in the room. And all of a sudden, sotava. And this could be religious people. You have to be careful. This is something we have to work on. When we make our parties, we already have came to the understanding that we need a mechitza, let's say, to separate everybody, to keep everything good. But there's higher levels also. It's not just in a wall. You put a wall up in the kosher, this doesn't do it. The behavior, we go to a lot of parties. That's why we have to be careful. We're very social, our community. We have to be very careful in this intermingling over a period of time. It sounds extreme, but I'm going to tell you. But our Torah is very realistic. Our Torah is so concerned about socializing with friends and couples, whether it's traveling together, whether it's going out always, constantly. This is not a Torah way. I'm sorry to tell you. Our Torah is a realistic Torah. Some might say, oh, it's a Torah, what kind of Torah? That's what it thinks of? Well, just look at the world, and who's right? The Torah is right, of course. Whenever there's a breach in husband-wife relationship, and there's a breach where people do things past the boundary, there's trouble, chas v'shalom. Even if it never leads to the big avon, but there's trouble already. It becomes maybe not as scandalous as the result of this, but it's not good. We have to think of that as religious Jews. The Gemara says, even a man, al tarbesi hayma isha, he shouldn't talk too much to a lady. And you know what the Gemara says? Be'ishto amru, let's talk about his wife even. Kal v'chomer be'ishet havero. Or the Moshe to speak to his friend's wife? What do you business have with your friend's wife? What is the connection to you? It's not your wife, what are you talking? Stam, not your best friend. You have a friend, go talk, call the boys. But we lost this, unfortunately. Today, we live in America, everything is loose. This flirtatious behavior is not Torah way. Everybody's thinks modesty is about necklines. And how long is the dress, and how long, and unfortunately, how tall is the mechitza? But it is. But there's much more than that. There's a modesty in behavior. This lady over here was a modest. She had the wig on. She had the tickle on, whatever you call it, the kisui rosh, whatever language you speak. And still she found herself in the Beit HaMikdash under great suspicion. Well, in this case of the Torah, she was guilty. And she drank, and to tell you the end of the story, she exploded. She didn't have a happy ending over here. She was guilty. She should have admitted, and she would have just walked away, but she didn't admit. So she had to suffer her fate. Now, the Ramban says, this is a very interesting law. most of the laws of the Torah are not miraculous laws. They're regular laws. Shekel ulav on Sukkot, sit in a sukkah, eat matzah on Pesach. This is a law of the Torah. If the wife is under suspicion, take her to the Beit HaMikdash, and all of a sudden you're going to see a miracle. That you drink water and this happens, you're looking at a miracle. The Ramban says, why would God go against His regular nature of the world where things happen in natural order, and to go to the extreme now where it's a halakha that it ends with an open miracle? He says, you know why? Because the sanctity of Jewish families is everything. To keep the integrity of Jewish families, to make sure that the children are pure and tahor, and there's no compromise on the lineage, and there's no compromise on the genes, the halachic genes, and that Klal Yisrael has the proper genealogy. If God forbid, the Torah wouldn't be so strict in this case, there would be adulterous situations, children would be mamzerim, and mamzer is a child from an adulterous relation. Mamzerim are not allowed to come into the kahal, they cannot be married into our kahal. And bar minan shekhina leaves when there's mamzerim. Our Torah is so strict. There's kohanim, there's leviim, there's yisraelim. We're so strict in who you can marry, who can't you marry. And once you lose that purity of the lineage, then there goes the nation. Why are we so strict in our community on converts? Maybe more than any other community in the world. Because we're worried about the purity of the families. Because as long as there's purity in the families, and everybody knows each other, and we marry each other, and you're producing Jews that have good history, there's beracha. But chas v'shalom, once already you start, we don't know who the father was, a convert, was it a legitimate conversion, did it for reasons that ulterior motives, and this one over here came from other place, we don't know who they are, who is the mother, we don't know anything. Or maybe maybe they didn't get a divorce, and then they got remarried, and it's adultery, because if they didn't get divorced, it's ishit ish, the problems. When it comes to these questions, these are the most serious questions in our religion. Who to accept and who not to accept. The greatest rabbis of the generation deal with these questions on a constant basis. A legality, do we accept or don't we accept? You say, big deal, accept them. We want to be nice people. Baruch Abba. No, Baruch Abba. You're going to affect now generations upon generations. The beracha of our people is because of its insularity, which means we're insulated. We keep it very closed. We make it very difficult. That's by design. We're not interested in putting signs up. It's not Pesach over here. Whoever wants to come to join us? On the contrary, we close the doors. Because we want to make sure that our families remain tahor. One of the jobs of Eliyahu HaNavi when he comes, the Mashiach is going to come, he has to pick out all the mamzerim. He's going to look at the guy's father. Oh, you're a mamzer. I'm a mamzer. How about it? Yeah, this is mamzer, 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 mamzer. And who knows what he's going to do with them. But in the interim, the Torah says we want to keep the families pure. Therefore, we go to the extreme, even a miracle. So a lady will see, wow, this lady blew up. Why? She committed adultery. Why? She'll be so scared. It'll be a great deterrent not to make mamzerim in Klal Yisrael. But I want to make another point. This is important, what I'm going to tell you now. What I said now is important too. Also it's important. The Torah says, right after the story of Sota, talks about a Nazir. What is a Nazir? It's a new story. That's a fellow that accepts upon himself a vow. I'm not drinking wine for 30 days. I'm not going to go after the pleasures of this world. He doesn't take a haircut. He doesn't go to a cemetery. He accepts upon himself abstention. He doesn't want to indulge. No grapes, no raisins, no grape nuts, and all these things. Nothing. Grape seeds. So the rabbis ask, what's the connection between Sota and Nazir? Why the Torah puts them next to each other? So you know why? If a person sees a Sota blow up, he should become a Nazir. What's the story? A person went to the Beit HaMikdash one day, for personal reasons. They tell him, you know what? 2 o'clock, there's a Sota ceremony. Oh, I'm here today, there's a Sota ceremony? They never saw it. He'll go upstairs to the gallery, he can watch it. Oh, he sees the Kohen, oh, Sota, you admit, he says, I'm not admitting, I didn't do it. You were going to drink the water. All of a sudden he sees a human bomb. He sees that. He should go now. Don't drink wine for 30 days. Be a Nazir. Why? Because he has to say to himself, why? How did this lady become a Sota? Drank wine, talked to men, was promiscuous, was indulgent. Oh, I know you asked that question already. No, I can't answer it because I'm a man. I can't answer it. You have to ask a lady to answer that question. And then she went after the pleasures of this world. So he should accept upon himself Nazir. And I ask you a simple question. What does he have to accept upon himself anything? He saw her blow up. This guy is scared out of his mind. He sees a lady like this blow up. You think he has any bad thoughts? Or any desire? Maybe the person that didn't see the explosion should maybe do something to protect himself. But this man, I say, is protected. He saw it. He knows how serious the Avon is. And the explanation is, you're right, he saw two things. He saw blow up, but he also saw Sota. The fact that he saw a Sota, she blew up 10 seconds later, but he saw it already. That it's a possibility. That it happened. Is it already? To us, we say, what do you mean, Sota? We never saw it, we'll never see it. Adultery, it doesn't exist. And all of a sudden, he says, this lady right over here, that's Sota. Why? Even though he saw the result, and it was a very negative result, human beings are very influenced. Human beings are very porous. The society affects us. So even though you saw Sotaba Kilkula, you saw Sotaba. You better do something to put a fence up. The reason why I'm telling you this, and it's not for any of you ladies, God forbid. But maybe somebody outside will hear this. Yesterday in the Kolel, as I want you to give me the benefit of the doubt, I didn't know this on my own. I thought I knew everything, but I guess I don't know everything. One of the rabbis came in the Kolel, he's talking about one of his congregants that comes into the shul. He learns, he does. He's telling the rabbi. He says, you don't know what's going on, rabbi, today in the world. What was going on? He thought also he knew everything. He said, in the TV, oh, the writer, the rabbi said TV, I don't know it, I don't have a TV. What am I going to know from TV? We don't have it. He said, today, on the TV, we shouldn't say it in the Beth Knesset, the most popular shows, you know what a show is? Is shows that glorify adultery. That's the purpose of the show. To glorify this. Shema Yisrael. Shema Yisrael. And people watch this. Could you imagine what's going on in the world today? And somebody, no, it doesn't affect me. No, I'm just entertainment doesn't...
You think I'm going to be like this?
When you see such perversion glorified, it weakens the whole fabric of society. It weakens the whole moral understanding, the ethics. A person cannot watch it. If the Torah said, if you see a sota blow up, you have to stop drinking wine for a month. Imagine if you see a sota becomes the queen of America. I don't know what the Torah would say. Maybe you have to be, maybe I can't breathe for a month. I don't know what the Torah is going to say. What could you say? You see what's going on in the world today? This is understanding on primetime television today. Where what the Torah calls a perversion, the American society says, it's good. You see what the producers of Hollywood are able to do? They're able to take something so filthy, something so disgusting, something so repulsive, and they can put sugar on it, and put little food coloring on it, and turn it into cotton candy. They took from the worst avonot, and now it's becoming glorified. And the person that is loyal, that's meskeen. What is he doing? That's a hazid case. That's the way you're going to live. You're losing out on all the fun of life. People are watching this. This already begins a very, very, very terrible, terrible slope. Downward slope. Tra'avon. Unless there's such a thing today as kosher TV, I don't think they have such kosher TV. You know what kosher TV is? Kosher TV is in the spot where you put the TV, you take it and you put a fish tank over there. That's the kosher TV. Watch the fish. Because the adults are a little naive to this. We don't have time to watch TV, even if we had a TV. We're too busy. But the kids have a lot of time. We should indoctrinate the youth of the next generation that that's what they're watching. How ni'uf and all these things are being... We think it's television like when we were young, which was maybe more innocent. Our rabbis were so smart. 50 years ago, the stifler screamed against television. They said, what are you screaming about? Well, it's innocuous. So you're watching Channel 13. They're showing you about some Zulus in Africa jumping around with their banjos. What's the difference? There's nothing. No, he said, hey, what do you think? Yes, not right away. He's going to start with this show? He's not going to start with this show. He wants everybody to get it in the house first. This one will say, oh, I like the science, I like the news, I like the history, I like the... Each one has a different preference. Oh, once it's in the house, nah, too late, you plugged it in, you can't get rid of it. Nah, he showed you his card. What has to happen? You see, 3 or 4 years ago, I once also spoke about the danger of television. Rabbi, you're radical. This is black hat theory. This is extremism. I ask you today, that's what black hat theory became if we're against adulterous television? That's already extreme? How far left have we gone where if somebody says that this is wrong, and this is a cause enough not to have this in the house. This is cause enough. Because how can we expose our children or ourselves to such things? The Torah says, look how far it goes to the protective families. And here we're going to go now and let our children see. Now you wonder what's going on in the street. Why the world is upside down. Why the world is topsy-turvy. Why 8 out of 10 marriages in America don't work out because of adultery, because of all these problems. Why? Why do you think it happens? America used to have certain ethics. Even if they weren't ethical in private, but in public they showed a certain image. But now in public even to show these things, such a breach, and you cannot say you don't get affected. Because, doesn't bother me. One lady told me, Rabbi, you know, I watched this. It's actually a girl. Just now I gave this shiur in the school of the girls. So one of the girls, I didn't expect anybody that ever saw this. So one of the girls said, no, but I watch it to see how bad it is. So I know how good we have it. I said, if this makes you feel better to justify what you did, I won't tell you otherwise. But there's other ways without going to such an extreme. Just walk in the street and look at the goyim coming out of the public schools, and look at the yeshivas when they come out. Right away you see the difference. With the tattoos and the mutilation of the face and the hair and the... And look at the way that righteous boys and girls come out of the yeshiva. You don't have to go. So maybe move to Las Vegas for 3 months a year, so you'll appreciate Mea Shearim the other 9 months. You don't have to go that far. This is not an acceptance to see how bad it is, so you know how good it is. We know how good it is. That's why we say to the ladies, to the righteous ladies, to Tazku, don't be scared now. You're scared to tell me Rabbi was good class because, oh, he talked to the rabbi. Don't be nervous to say hello to the rabbi. We're talking about, see, that's the Yetzer Hara. See, I'm not talking about saying goodbye to the rabbi. That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the social flirtatious behavior that's outside of a comment or a question. This is something over a cup of wine in a place like that could lead. I'm talking about the over-socializing of couples, of friends. Husband and the wife is a private thing. It should remain private. It shouldn't be that these things become now public property for everybody to be together. This is avon. It's avon. It doesn't work this way. And then Be'ezrat Hashem, our rabbis tell us, where there's modesty, there's blessing. Where there's modesty, there's beracha. Bil'am tried to curse us. He couldn't curse us. He says, "In am levadad yishkon." He said, "Matovu ohalecha Yaakov, mishkenotecha Yisrael." He saw the beautiful Jewish tents that were so modest and private. He said, "As much as I want to curse these people, I can't curse them because where there's modesty and where there's unity amongst people, without intermingling too much, then Borei Olam will give us the greatest beracha." May God bless you all, ladies. And Be'ezrat Hashem, you'll have a lineage. Kulam yakirun ki hem zera berach Hashem. Amen v'amen.